I dropped the sword as I brought the dagger to my own throat. Stop, I shouted. Stop, or I will slit my throat. Castile whirled toward me. Poppy, I'll do it, I warned as one of the soldiers stepped up to Castile. I'll cut my throat wide open if any of you take another step forward. I doubt any of you will live if that happens. He'll take you down. I'm about to take you down, Castile growled. I ignored him. And if he doesn't, what do you think the Duchess will do? The Queen? They'll do what you did to your men. You'll die, every last one of you. That I can promise. Faces paled and glances were exchanged. Several stepped back. The sky was ripped apart by deep wails, by snapping growls and piercing howls that came from the woods and everywhere at once, it seemed. It was a crescendo, a call that kept rising and rising and was answered by yips and barks that seemed to come from the trees, from the bush surrounding the left side of the rise, and from the western road. The soldiers before us started to turn. Wolven raced from the forest, streaking over the ground and launching into the air. They were a sea of fur and claws, taking down soldiers, tearing through armor and flesh. I saw Jasper and Delano among them, Vanetta too. But there had to be dozens and dozens of them, and their timing had been impeccable. A large brown wolven lifted its head, ears perked. Another and another did the same, luminous pale eyes locking onto mine. Slowly, I lowered the knife from my throat. All of a sudden, it sounded like the rise was coming down around us, like a thousand boulders tumbling and falling to the ground from the sky. But the rise still stood, and nothing. Not even the stars had fallen. I swung toward Castile. He smirked, eyes lit from within, as he took a step back, exhaling deeply. What reminded me of thunder grew louder, and as I turned, I realized that what I'd heard was the pounding of hooves. Pale horses poured out from between the trees and filled the western road, mud and blood streaking their legs as they kicked up dirt and grass. Moonlight glinted off golden armor and raised swords. Those blades, those horses, mowed through the lines and rows of soldiers as white banners streamed and rippled behind the pale mounts, banners bearing the golden sword and arrow lying across the sun. The crest of Atlantia. Atlantia had come, and there were hundreds of them. Tired muscles in my arms loosened as they charged past us, stirring the blood-soaked air and lifting the tendrils of hair that had escaped my braid. They set fire to the remaining catapults, to the wagons as they swarmed the soulless army, and I knew none would be left alive. As the wolven followed the army, a warm, damp nose bumped my left hand, and I looked down into the pale blue eyes of a large, fawn-colored wolven. Kieran nudged my hand again, and I opened it, revealing the golden mark and the ring on my finger. Yeah, I said hoarsely. You missed it. His ears perked as he looked over to where Castile stood.
You missed a lot, the prince said.
Kieran trotted over to him as I turned and saw the crimson carriage untouched. Was she still in there, or had she run? I was walking before I knew, running toward the carriage, barely aware of Castile shouting my name. I tore open the carriage door, and the Duchess hissed from the dimly lit interior. She lurched forward, catching herself on the door when she saw me. Her eyes widened with surprise. Penelope! I punched her in the face. The Duchess stumbled backward, falling between the seats as she cupped her nose. Blood poured out between her fingers. That hurt, she seethed, glaring up at me as I climbed into the carriage. Things are gonna hurt way worse than that, I promised.
She lowered her hands. When did you become so violent, maiden?
I was always violent. I caught her arm as she reached for something. My fingers curled around her cool skin. And I was never the maiden.
But you were. You always were.
Where is my brother? I demanded.
Come with me, and I'll show you.
I shook my head. Where is Castile's brother?
With yours, she said,
and I didn't believe her. Is he alive?
Which one?
Prince Malik.
How else would we have been able to ascend Tawny if he wasn't?
I let go of her wrist as my stomach sunk. You lie.
Why lie about that?
Because the ascended do nothing but lie.
You know that Tawny couldn't wait to ascend.
She rose to her knees.
She was ecstatic when I told her the queen had petitioned the gods for an exception, that she would ascend. I sent her to the capital. The queen did it for you. I told her how close you and Tawny are.
Shut up!
She wants you to be comfortable when you return home. Her blooded granddaughter.
Her eyes widened as she caught sight of my hand.
What is that?
The Duchess scrambled forward, clasping my left wrist.
The imprint!
She stared at the golden swirl across my palm.
You're married!
I pulled my hand free as she rocked backward, laughing.
You're married! To the Prince of Atlantia!
Pitch-black eyes lifted to mine as a wide smile broke out across her face, revealing the fangs of both her upper and lower jaw.
If I'd known, none of this would have been necessary. You, born of flesh and fire, the queen will be so thrilled to learn you've done what she could never accomplish. Seize Atlantia right out from under them, under her. Our queen will be so proud of—
Shut up, I snarled, thrusting the bloodstone blade deep into her chest. Duchess Tierman's eyes widened only a fraction in surprise. I met her stare, holding the dagger there until the cracks formed in her skin, until the light went out of her eyes and her body caved in around the blade of the wolven bone and bloodstone dagger. And just like an ascended, I felt nothing but a sudden iciness as I watched Duchess Tierman turn to ash. I turned. Castile stood outside the door, the lines and angles of his features sharp in the moonlight.
You beat me to her.
I did. A long moment passed.
Did she say anything to you?
No, I swallowed thickly. She said nothing.
Are you okay?
I nodded. Are you? He said nothing as the sounds of battle grew fainter, and I tentatively opened my senses. His emotions ran the gambit, a swirling storm that was hard for even me to make sense of.
No one comes near this carriage, he said,
speaking to whoever was beyond the opening. He hoisted himself up onto the conveyance. The ceiling was just high enough for him to stand.
I'm very conflicted right now.
You are? He nodded as the door swung closed behind him.
I'm furious with you for threatening your own life, for even thinking that was a suitable option.
What else could I do? I demanded, lowering the dagger.
I'm not done yet, princess.
My brows flew up. Do I look like I care if you're done? A shadow of a smile appeared in the dim glow.
I'm livid that you would do something like that.
Well, I'm annoyed that you don't seem to realize that at that moment we were out of options, I snapped.
Still not done, he said.
Guess what? I don't care. His eyes deepened to a heated honey.
I'm furious, and yet at the same time I'm in awe. Because I know you would have done it. You would have killed yourself to save the lives of those who still stood. You would have done it to save me. Backing up as he came forward, I stepped on the cloak and whatever else the Duchess had been wearing. You don't sound like you're in awe.
That's because I don't want to be awed by something so incredibly reckless.
His chin dipped and his voice deepened.
And that's because I need you.
A sudden hot flush chased away the coldness stirring inside me.
I need to feel your lips on mine.
He planted his hands on the carriage wall, caging me in.
I need to feel your breath in my lungs. I need to feel your life inside me. I just need you.
It's an ache, this need. Can I have you? All of you? I don't know who moved first. If it was him or me or both of us, it didn't matter. We came together. The kiss, just as wild as the one under the catapult. It said everything that words couldn't communicate at the moment. We kissed as if we hadn't expected to have the luxury to do it again. And for far too many minutes, I knew we both believed that. We'd been on the cusp of either being separated or killed. And that kiss, and what came next in that shadowy carriage, was proof of how rattled we both were by the knowledge that we could have lost each other just as we'd truly found one another. And it was more than that which allowed me not to care where we were. What I'd done in here, and what was happening outside these thin walls. When he slipped the dagger from my hand, sheathing it on my thigh, or when he turned and lifted me, placing me on my knees on the cushioned bench as he tugged the leggings and undergarments to my knees. What allowed me not to care was what the Duchess had said before I killed her. The utter coldness and emptiness I'd felt as I watched her die, and the haunting intuition that there had been some truth to her words. Castile placed my hands on the wall as he scraped the sharp edge of a fang along the side of my throat, sending a bolt of wanton heat and dampness through me. "This is so inappropriate," I panted.
"I don't give a fuck."
He nipped at my skin again, and my entire body arched.
"Brace yourself."
I did. But nothing could have prepared me for what happened. He struck as fast as a viper, sinking his fangs deep into my throat at the same moment he thrust into me. The twisting shock of pain and pleasure stole my breath and fixed my wide eyes on the ceiling, on the circle with an arrow piercing the center embossed in black and crimson. Infinity. Power. The ascended royal crest. And then I became that fire again, the flame. There was nothing but an excess of pleasure and ecstasy, intensified by the deep, rumbling sounds he made, the hand that slipped between my thighs, and those wickedly skilled fingers. A new madness engulfed us, one not too different from what I'd felt when I'd stepped out into the courtyard. And maybe all the death we saw and inflicted also drove us to this moment, to the hungry way his mouth moved at my neck, and the nearly greedy way my hips pushed back against his. The feel of each other was a reminder that we were alive, that we'd survived, that there would be time for all those things I'd thought of as we were pinned to the ground under the catapult. That even as uncertain as our future was, there was one. And when the storm inside us crested and took us both over the edge, I knew it was also the intensity of what we felt for one another, what we had both been fighting that drove us, that drove Castile to abandon his people to save me, that drove me to hold a dagger to my own throat, ready to slice deep to save him. The intensity of the emotion, how all-consuming it suddenly felt, didn't make sense. My head fell back against his chest, and he kissed the corner of my mouth, the longer scar, and then the shorter one. I didn't care. "You already have me," I whispered. Chapter 41. The field I'd seen the guardians training in was littered with cots, occupied by the injured and the dead. Most were mortal. 20 dissenters, or those of Atlantean descent that had settled in Spessa's End, had perished. At least 50 of Atlantean descent who'd arrived with the army had died. And double that occupied the cots. A dozen or so Wolven were injured beyond their capabilities to heal themselves. The elemental Atlanteans that had made up the vast majority of the army had healed themselves. None of the guardians had fallen, and only a few were among the injured. The Atlantean army had been successful, though, even with the casualties. They'd seized control by the time Castile and I stepped out of the carriage to find Kieran and several Atlantean warriors standing guard. I couldn't even muster an ounce of embarrassment at the knowledge that some realized what had happened inside the carriage. Only one soldier in the entirety of the Soulless Army had been left alive. Castile and a few others had left hours ago, escorting a young boy barely beyond the cusp of manhood to the scorched land of Pompeii, charged with the task of relaying a warning and a message. Atlantia had reclaimed Spessa's End, and any who came for the town would meet the same fate as those before them. The message was also an opportunity. Castile had initiated a part of his original plan. The Battle of Spessa's End didn't have to be the first of many to come. The prince and princess of Atlantia were willing to meet with the king and queen of Solus to discuss the kingdom's futures. I didn't envy the boy who was tasked with delivering the message, and I didn't envy any of the family and friends of those who had lost loved ones. Each time I saw someone I knew standing, I'd been overcome with relief.
"Thank you."
A raspy voice drew my attention. An older Wolven had taken a nasty blow to the arm, nearly severing it. He was the last one to be checked. I'd healed him, like I'd healed all of those who'd allowed me to try. Some had refused my touch, like those in New Haven had. My chest squeezed painfully as Elijah's image took form in my mind. I cleared my throat. "You're welcome." Back and arms aching, I started to rise. "I don't know if your arm is completely healed, so you should have a healer look at it as soon as possible." The Wolven caught my left arm before I could move. His eyes widened slightly at the contact, and I wondered if he'd felt the strange electric-like current that others had when he touched me. He slowly turned my hand over.
"It's true, then?"
he asked, looking at the golden swirl across my palm.
"You've married our prince."
I nodded as my heart skipped. This middle-aged Wolven, with his head of ropey black and silver dreads, had been the first to ask.
"Others are saying you fought beside him the entire battle."
I started on the rise, but I did go down.
"And yet, you're here. You have been here this whole time, healing others,"
he said, his pale eyes sharp.
"With your touch."
How could I not when I can help? And I had helped. Talia the healer I'd caught a brief glimpse of had her hands full with those who refused my aid. So, after the battle, I had taken the time to wash the blood from my face and hands, even though it was still caked to my clothing and dried under my fingernails. He nodded as he let go of my wrist and laid his hand back on the cot.
"Kieran said you were of the empath bloodline."
I nodded again.
"I've never seen an empath glow silver before," he said, "and I remember them. I was a young boy then, and there was only a handful still alive, but I'd remember something like that."
Wondering how old this Wolven was, I said, "Jasper said the same."
"Not surprised to hear that. He knows things," the Wolven said, "except when to keep his mouth closed."
I smiled wearily. "That's what I hear.
You must be descended from an old empath line. What else could I be? I asked, not really expecting an answer. Yes, he murmured. What else?
I looked over my shoulder, spotting Quentin and Beckett moving among the injured and recovering. Water and food are being brought. Is there anything else you need?
No, the woven eyed me as I stood. But you should be careful, princess.
I stilled.
I've watched the others watching you. Our prince may have chosen you. You may have fought beside him and for them. You may have healed many of us, he said, with a voice full of gravel. But they didn't choose you, and many aren't old enough to even remember the empath bloodlines. Those who are, remember what they can do, what they were called.
Soul eaters? I can't do that, I said, even as my heart started pumping. I can't drain a person of emotion.
But they don't know that.
His gaze shifted to the cots.
Is there someone here to watch over you?
He started to sit up.
You shouldn't be out here alone, with the prince.
I'm fine. Gently, I pressed him onto his back. I'm armed and can take care of myself.
I don't doubt that, but...
His features tightened, almost as if he were in pain, but I knew he wasn't.
I shouldn't say this. It's damn near treasonous. But you healed me. I owe you.
You don't owe me.
It would have taken days, maybe even longer, for me to heal that wound. And that is if I kept my arm. I'm a wolven, princess. That does not mean I can grow back limbs.
I glanced at the pale pink mark that nearly encircled the entirety of his biceps. The gods had to have favored him to keep that limb attached after that kind of injury.
It's pretty well known among the armies that once the king knew of the prince's plans to capture you, he began to make his own plans. I doubt he knows how much the prince's plans have changed, but his have not.
A heaviness sat on my shoulders. He plans to use me to send a message. I doubt I would be a message that was alive and breathing, I said.
I know. Then you should also know that Castile is our prince, the wolven said in a low voice. But Valin, his father, is our king.
I know, I repeated, fixing a smile on my face.
Do you?
The heaviness intensified as I nodded again. You should rest, at least until Talia can confirm you're healed. The older wolven relented unhappily, but with one last goodbye, I roamed the edges of the makeshift infirmary, scanning the field and the banners embossed with the Atlantean crest. I could feel eyes on me. I'd felt them the entire time I moved through the field. But with all the pain that had been echoing around me, I hadn't allowed myself to sense anything beyond the agony.
But they didn't choose you.
I flinched as the wolven's words played over and over in my head as I turned away from the field. What the wolven had said about the king and the veiled warning hinting at where the Atlantean people's loyalty lay didn't come as much of a shock. In the back of my mind, I'd already figured as much. Hadn't I? And that was before they heard Duchess Tierman's ridiculous claims that I was Queen Ileana's granddaughter. The queen was an ascended. I was not of her blood, nor born of flesh and fire, whatever that meant. But I wasn't like other empaths, and even so, that bloodline sounded more feared than respected. I knew I wouldn't have many supporters in Atlantia. I barely had them here. Castile was the prince of Atlantia, well-loved and respected. That much was obvious. But not a single person spoke ill of his father or mother, and I knew they were just as loved as he was. Castile was the prince, but his father was the king, and if he wanted me dead to send a message, his people would follow his lead.
I didn't know if a ring or marriage imprint would change that, when me fighting and killing to protect the people of Atlantia hadn't. And Castile? He had to know that. He always had to know that. Sitting in the tub of warm, soapy water, I had my arms locked around my legs, my knees pressed to my chest, and my eyes closed. I recalled the warm sun under my feet, and the weight of my mother's and father's hands in mine. I remembered how easy Ian's smile was as he ran ahead, and the sound of my mother's laugh, and the way my father stared at her like it was the most beautiful sound he'd ever heard. The corners of my lips curved up, thinking of those moments had eased the coldness that returned when I walked back to the fortress. What the Duchess had said, and thoughts of Tawny, haunted me, just like I knew they would. Along with worries about the King's plans and the loyalty of the Atlantean people, I opened my eyes to the soft click of the bathing chamber door, the scent of rich, earthy spice, and crisp pine enveloped the soap's lemony scent as Castile knelt beside me. The strands of his hair were damp, and the clothing he wore was clean and free of blood. When and where he'd cleaned up, I had no idea. I hadn't seen him since he left with the young soulless soldier. "Hey," he said quietly, his gaze roaming over my face, lingering on a bruise I'd gained in the battle. "Hi," I whispered. One side of his lips curled up, and I felt my cheeks warm. I cleared my throat. "Is everything okay with the soldier?" He nodded. "He's on his way to Whitebridge." Reaching over, he gathered up several strands of my wet hair and draped it over my shoulder. He bared the bite mark on my throat, and I swore his grin deepened.
Here I owe you a thank you."
I held my legs tighter. "For what?"
"You spent the entire day healing those you could and easing the pain of those you couldn't."
Those twin amber jewels met mine.
"Thank you."
I swallowed. I only did what I could, what anyone with my abilities would do. At least, that's what I hoped. Some of them wouldn't let me. His fingers trailed over the damp skin of my back.
"Some of them are idiots."
"They are your people."
"Our people," he corrected softly.
My breath caught, and a bit of panic and unease sparked at the realization that they were my people, whether they liked it or not. I'm sorry about Elijah and all of them. I liked him, and Magda was nice, but they were your friends." His lashes lowered as he exhaled raggedly.
"I've known Elijah since he was a boy, and I know how crazy that sounds since I look younger than him. He knew the risks, and I know he fought back. I know all of them did, but he didn't deserve that. None of them did."
"No, they didn't," I agreed softly.
"I should have made them all leave, risked drawing the attention. I should have—"
"You did what you could. Some of those people couldn't travel because of their injuries, and none of them were ready to leave immediately," I argued. "What happened there isn't your fault." Castile said nothing. "You know that, right? That was the Ascended. They are responsible, not you." He nodded slowly.
"I know that."
"Do you?" Swallowing, he nodded, and I wasn't sure if that was the case.
"I was told something odd earlier when I returned to Spessa's End."
"I'm half afraid to ask." There was a brief grin.
"You remember the wolven who showed up during the battle?"
"How could I forget that?"
"Glad you haven't, because that was when you had a knife to your throat."
"I was trying to save you and the people," I reminded him.
"We've already covered that." "We did. But Kieran told me that he heard you calling him. He said the other wolven felt it too. that they all veered in our direction. Jasper confirmed it, he said. He said the same thing.
I didn't. I mean, how? I swallowed. I was obviously feeling a lot in that moment. I felt like, I don't know, like I was about to lose control. But how is that even possible?
I don't know, Poppy. I've never seen anything like that. I don't know how they could have picked up on anything from you.
He tugged on a strand of my wet hair and draped it over my bare shoulder.
Neither do they. I asked them when they came by just now. Both said they felt you calling for them, calling for help.
Goosebumps broke out over my skin.
Delano! Oh my gods.
What?
When we were in New Haven, and I was kept in the room, he burst inside at one point, swearing he heard me calling for him. But I hadn't.
Castile's brows slashed over his eyes.
Did something happen at that time? Because if so, and I wasn't told about it,
nothing happened. I was mad. Mad at you because I was locked in the room, I explained.
He then said it must have been the wind, and it was windy then, so I forgot about it.
Castile lifted another strand of hair.
That's bizarre.
I stared at him. That's all you have to say to them feeling my call? That's bizarre?
Well, the definition of bizarre is something strange and unusual.
I know what bizarre means, I interrupted. Is that another empath trait manifesting? His gaze met mine.
I've never heard of an empath being able to do that.
My stomach dipped. Just like glowing silver and being able to heal.
You could be of two bloodlines, he cut in. We talked about that before. It could be possible.
More possible than Queen Ileana being my grandmother.
I had no idea what to think of the whole hearing my call thing, but what if that was an empath ability? People could project their pain and fear. What if that was what I was doing, and the Wolven for some reason picked up on it? That seemed like it made logical sense.
What do we do now? I asked.
Right now, at this very moment.
His smile was smoke as his gaze traveled over the bare skin he could see, which wasn't any of the interesting parts.
I have so many ideas.
That's not what I was talking about, I said, even though I was glad to see the somberness leave his eyes.
I know, but I'm distracted. It's not my fault. You're naked.
You can't see anything.
What I can see is enough.
He lowered himself to his knees as he rested his arms on the edge of the tub.
So I'm thoroughly distracted.
You being distracted sounds like your problem and not mine, I told him. He chuckled as he bent his head, kissing the patch of my knee that wasn't covered by my arms.
We'll leave for Atlantia tomorrow. The Atlantean armies that arrived will remain behind just in case the Ascended want to make a very bad life choice. Spessa's End will be protected.
There was a whooshing sensation in my chest. So soon?
We would have already been there if things had gone as planned.
He leaned back.
We are married, but you haven't been crowned yet. That needs to happen.
I worried my lower lip. I get that the crowning makes things official, but what will that really change? I briefly closed my eyes. Our people still don't trust me or like me. Whatever. And your father still has his plans, right? For me?
His brows lowered. My father's plans have changed.
What if they haven't? He studied me for a moment.
Did someone say something to you?
Not wanting to potentially get the older Wolven in trouble, I gave a slight shake of my head. It's just, I know many don't accept me, even after the marriage and last night. You're the prince and all, but he's the king.
And you're starting to sound like Alistair, he interrupted. I'd almost think he got you all worked up again. But he stayed in Atlantia.
It's not Alistair, I said. But he did say that. And he has a point. I know you wanted to marry me partly because it offered me a level of protection.
Originally, Poppy. And that was only because I'd convinced myself that was the reason, he stated. It wasn't the only reason. Neither was freeing my brother or preventing a war. I wanted you, and I wanted to find a way to try to keep you.
There was a different kind of snag in my chest now, in response to his words.
You have me. I whispered the words I'd said to him in the carriage. I know. His gaze held mine. And no one, not even my father or my mother, will change that.
I believed him. I really did.
No one will harm you, he vowed. I will not allow it.
Neither will I. He smiled then, both dimples appearing.
I know. Come.
Rising, he reached for the towel.
If you stay in there any longer, you will start to grow fins.
Like a sea wren? A grin appeared.
Like a sea wren.
I didn't move, though. I lied to you. Castile arched a brow.
About?
You asked me if the Duchess had said anything to me before I killed her, and I said no. That was a lie. A heartbeat passed.
What did she say?
I asked her about my brother and yours. She said they were together, but that's all she would say about them. I watched him return to kneeling beside me. She told me that Tawny was going to ascend without waiting, that it could have already happened. She said that the Queen knew how much I cared for Tawny and wanted her to be there. So when I returned home, I would feel comfortable.
Gods.
Castile leaned over, cupping the back of my head.
You don't know if any of that is true. Any of it, Poppy. Your brother, mine, Tawny,
she said that the Queen will be thrilled when she learns we've married. That if she'd known that had happened, none of what took place last night would have been necessary. I told him, and he stilled. She told me that I accomplished the one thing the Queen never could. That I took Atlantia.
That doesn't make any sense, Poppy.
I know, I said. Neither does what she said about the Queen being my grandmother. It makes no sense at all. It's so far out there, so unbelievable, that I can't help but wonder if some of it is true. Chapter 42. We rode east toward Atlantia under a sky that was a canvas of blues. The men who'd traveled with Alistair were with us, even though the Wolven hadn't made the trip back to Spessa's End. They were missing a few, more than just the Wolven Dante, but our group had tripled, if not more, in size. We'd gained Jasper and several other Wolven, who were returning to Atlantia. Vanetta had remained back in Spessa's End, but she had promised that she would see me soon, as she planned to return for her mother's birthday and the upcoming birth of her little brother or sister. The barren flatlands on either side of the heavily wooded area gave way to fields of tall reeds with tiny white flowers. Beckett ran beside us in his wolven form, seeming to pull from an endless reserve of energy I found enviable. He would race ahead, disappearing among the wispy plants, only to pop up a few seconds later beside us once more. He never strayed too far from our side, or rather from Castile's side. I figured Beckett's closeness had to do with his prince's presence, and I was glad I picked up no fear from him, from any of those who traveled with us. But the group was quiet, even Castile, and there were so many reasons for the silence. There wasn't a single person here who hadn't lost someone in the battle or at New Haven. I couldn't think of Elijah, of Magda and her unborn child, of any of them. I couldn't think of who would now add the names to the walls underground. But I knew Castile did. I knew that was why he'd fallen silent several times the night before, and I figured it had very little to do with what we'd talked about. He missed Elijah, mourned him and all the others, and I knew he believed he'd failed them. My thoughts were heavy, and it wore me down. The lack of sleep didn't help. Nightmares of the night of the Craven attack found me once more, and even though Castile had been there when I woke, gasping for air with a scream burning through my throat, the horrors of the night found me again, as soon as I fell back asleep. I wasn't looking forward to tonight. The sun was high above us when I realized the horizon I'd been staring at wasn't where the clouds met the land. I sat straighter, gripping the saddle as patches of dark green started to appear in the gray ahead. This mist, it was the mist obscuring the mountains, so thick that, for however many miles we'd traveled, I'd believed it to be the sky.
You see it now? Castile asked. The Skotos?
Heart stammering, I nodded. The mist is so thick. If it's like this during the day, how much worse is it at night?
It'll thin out a bit once we get into the foothills.
Castile's arm remained secure around me as I stretched forward. But at night, well, the mist is all around you. I shivered as more of the mountains began to peek through the mist. A rocky cropping here, a cluster of trees there. How did the armies get through the mist then? I looked at Kieran. How did you get here so quickly?
The gods allowed it, he replied, and my brows rose. The mist did not come for us. It thinned out at night, enough for us to continue forward.
I sat back against Castile, hoping the gods would allow us the same. Castile burst the bubble of hope the next second.
The mist is never as bad leaving Atlantia as it is entering.
Great, I murmured.
We're lucky the Skotos Mountains are nowhere near as large as the range beyond,
Nail said, from where he rode on Jasper's other side.
There are larger ones?
The Skotos Mountains were the largest in Solis that I knew of, anyway. The Atlantean nodded.
It takes less than a day to cross where we're passing through. However, some peaks would take days.
He shifted on his saddle.
But there are mountains in Atlantia that stretch so high into the sky you see nothing else. Peaks so high that it would take weeks just to reach the top. And once there, even an Atlantean would find it difficult to breathe.
Tendrils of mist began to creep between the bushy reeds, forming little clouds above them. Beckett dashed ahead, and within a heartbeat was swallowed up by the mist. I sucked in a sharp breath, straining forward as I reached for my dagger.
He's okay.
Castile's hand closed over mine. He squeezed gently.
See? There he is.
My heart didn't slow as the dark, furry head appeared above the mist, tongue lolling as he panted with excitement. Are you sure there are no Craven here? Riding slightly ahead, Emil said,
There hasn't been a Craven this far east since the war.
I still remained alert as we neared a blanket of mist where only shadows of shapes existed behind it. Muscles tensed as every instinct in me wanted to grab the reins and pull Seti to a stop. We couldn't possibly pass through this. Who knew what waited on the other side? And what if they were wrong about the Craven? Goosebumps broke out across my skin as Jasper and Emil disappeared through the wall of mist. A shout built in my throat, lodging there when Delano vanished into the thick grayish-white haze. I started to press back against Castile. He slowed Seti.
The first time I saw the wall of mist from the other side, I refused to pass through. It wasn't because of the Craven. I hadn't learned yet that they travel in the mist. It was that I feared we'd reached the very end of the kingdom, and that there was nothing beyond it.
Castile told me, his arm a band of steel around me.
I know that sounds silly, but I was young, less than a year from the culling, and Kieran also feared passing through it.
I looked to our right, where Kieran kept pace with us. After everything I'd learned, I still found it hard to picture either of them afraid of anything.
It was Malik who went through first,
Castile continued, dragging his hand around my waist in a slow, comforting circle. I looked down, my gaze snagging on the golden band he wore.
For a moment, I thought that was the last I saw of my brother, but then he came back, told us there was nothing but weeds and sky on the other side.
That wasn't what he told us at first, Kieran chimed in. Malik claimed there were giants with three heads on the other side.
He said what? Castile laughed. Yeah, he did.
We believed him until he started laughing. Bastard doubled over with it.
There was a fondness in his tone, and it was so rare to hear him speak of his brother without sadness and anger.
It will only take a few seconds to pass through, I promise.
As Nail entered the mist, I nodded jerkily. If there are three-headed giants on the other side, I'm going to be very angry with both of you.
If there are three-headed giants awaiting us, your anger will be the least of my concerns,
Castile replied, tone light with amusement.
Ready?
Not really, but I said, yes. Fighting the urge to close my eyes, I jerked as thin vapors stretched out from the rapidly approaching mass, a cool caress against my cheeks. Seti made a soft whinny as the tendrils curled around his legs, and then the mist enveloped us. I could see nothing, nothing but the thick, choking, milky white air. Panic bubbled up in me. Castile shifted behind me, pressing his lips to the space behind my ear as he whispered, "Think of all the things I could do to you." The hand at my hip glided over my thigh and then up it, moving with predatory grace toward my very center.
That no one would ever be able to see, not even you.
My breath snagged for a wholly different reason as his fingers danced over me. I tensed as muscles low in my stomach clenched in response, and my head snapped to the side. I opened my mouth, but whatever I was about to say was forgotten when Castile caught my lower lip between his teeth. He slowly let go of my lip, but his mouth was still there, warm and solid against mine.
I have so many ideas.
My heart stuttered as a wave of shivers exploded over me. I could imagine what some of his ideas involved, and for a brief moment I wasn't thinking about anything. A breathy sound left me, lost to the mist.
You can open your eyes now,
he murmured against my lips. I hadn't even realized I'd closed them until he spoke, but now I knew why he'd done and said what he did. He'd sought to distract me, and it had worked, bringing a quick end to the rising panic. Thank you, I whispered, and his hand, which had made its way back to my hip, squeezed. I opened my eyes as he straightened behind me to see that the mist had thinned out to wispy coils around moss-shrouded rocks and the legs of the waiting horses. I blinked as I saw Beckett sitting before us, his tail swaying along the ground, stirring the mist as he craned his head back, looking up. I followed his gaze, lips parting on a sharp inhale, as I saw what he looked upon. Gold. Glittering, luminous gold leaves soaked in the rays of sunlight that penetrated the mist.
Beautiful, aren't they?
Delano asked, looking up. Yes. Awed, my gaze crept over the golden trees. I've never seen anything like them. Even when the leaves changed color in Macedonia with the weather, the yellows were muted and muddied. These leaves were pure spun gold. What kind of trees are they?
Trees of Ios, Castile answered, referring to the goddess of love, fertility, and beauty. I couldn't think of a better namesake. They grew in the foothills and throughout the Skotos range after she went to sleep here, deep underground.
I glanced back at Castile. She sleeps here? His eyes, which were only a shade darker than the leaves, met mine.
She does. Some believe she's under the highest peak,
Jasper said, drawing my wide-eyed gaze to his.
Where the trees of Ios flourish so intensely, you can see them from the chambers of Nyctos.
Chambers of Nyctos? I repeated.
It's a temple just beyond the pillars,
Emil explained.
Very beautiful. You must visit them.
Does he sleep there? I asked. He smiled as he shook his head.
No one knows where Nyctos rests.
Oh, I whispered.
We should go ahead and split into smaller groups, Castile cut in. Kieran will ride with us. Beckett, you need to take human form and go with Delano and Nail.
I watched the wolven bound through the mist, causing Nail's horse to prance nervously. The Atlantean rolled his eyes as he looked at Castile.
He's good practice for whenever you decide to settle down and have children,
Castile said, and I could hear the smile in his words. Nail looked like he might fall from his horse. Having guided his horse to face us, Jasper smirked.
I fear, after one night keeping an eye on Beckett, he will swear off children.
Gods, Nail muttered, as Beckett suddenly launched himself at a gold leaf that had tumbled into his line of sight. Quentin shook his head as he watched his friend.
You should see him with the butterflies. I really don't want to,
Nail sighed.
We'll meet at the Gold Rock,
Castile addressed the group.
Remember, no one goes anywhere unaccompanied. Stay together in groups no larger than three.
He turned to where Beckett was finally sitting.
Do not explore. Do not answer any calls.
My stomach tumbled. Was Castile referencing what the wolven believed they had heard from me?
I expect to see everyone at Gold Rock, all in one piece, with their minds intact,
Castile continued, and a shiver curled its way down my spine.
Be safe.
There were several nods as the group began to break apart, Beckett leaving with Nail and Delano, who said,
I'll make sure he shifts.
Quentin stayed with Jasper and Emil. But before they headed to our right, Jasper rode to our side, clasping Castile's hand.
Be safe, Cass. You've been gone far too long, and are too close to home not to arrive. You have nothing to fear,
Castile's voice softened. Jasper nodded, and then his attention shifted to me.
Stay close to them, Penelope. The magic in these mountains has a way of getting under your skin. Trust them. But be wary of trusting what your eyes and ears tell you.
And with those parting words, he rode off, the now pale and quiet Quentin in tow. I looked over my shoulder at Castile. What in the hell is this mountain going to do?
Nothing,
he replied, urging Sethi forward.
As long as we don't allow it to.
Quiet. Castile and Kieran didn't speak. The thick moss along the path cushioned the horses' steps. There were no sounds of birds or any animal life, nor the echo of any wind rustling the golden canopy of leaves above us. With every passing hour, the temperature seemed to drop another couple of degrees as we climbed the mountain. The heavy cloak I'd all but forgotten while in Spessa's End was donned. Soon a tingling numbness invaded my cheeks. It wasn't long after that when Castile tugged the hood of the cloak up over my head and pulled the halves of his around me too. We continued on in eerie silence and the unnatural beauty of the mountain. Gold leaves above glimmered, and along the ground, flecks of gold spotted the moss and glistened from the bark, reminding me of the Blood Forest. All too soon, the beams of sunlight filtering through the leaves faded, and the streaks of mist thickened, blanketing the moss as we continued climbing. The fog grew, swirling around our legs and then our waists. The last of the sun reached us, and we forged on. Several hours into the evening, we stopped when the mist stretched above us. Castile guided Seti to a halt as he glanced around. I had no idea what he was looking for, as I could see nothing but streams of white mist.
"This appears to be as good a place as any," he said,
his breath forming misty clouds as he turned to Kieran.
"What do you think?"
The wolven was a faint shape behind the mist.
"We've definitely reached the peak, so this should be fine."
"Should be.
How can you tell we've reached the peak?
If we hadn't, we wouldn't be able to see more than a few inches in front of us,"
Kieran answered as he dismounted, stirring the mist. I frowned. "They could see more than a few inches?" Castile shifted the reins to my hands.
"Hold on to these. I'm going to get down and walk you two over to the tree."
Taking the reins, I wondered exactly what tree he was talking about. He swung off Seti's back, and for a moment the gloom spun around him, seeming to swallow him. My heart kicked against my ribs. His face cleared the mist as he walked to Seti's front, curling his fingers around the horse's halter. He walked us through the chilled, churning air, and then stopped, taking the reins from me as he spoke to Seti, crooning softly to the horse. I picked up something about carrots and orchard grass before he came back to my side. Castile lifted his hands to my hips, and I gripped his forearms as I leaned back, pulling a leg over the saddle. He helped me down, taking my hand as he unloaded one of the larger bags and rolled the blankets.
"Will it be like this?"
I asked, as he guided me forward, hating that I had to go blindly.
"All night?" "It will, but you'll get used to it."
"I don't think that's possible."
"How about here?"
Kieran's voice came from somewhere.
"The ground is pretty level."
"Perfect."
Castile seemed to know exactly where Kieran was, because after a few moments he appeared from within the mist. Castile let go of my hand, and I almost reached for it as I looked back, unable to see anything.
"Do you think Seti will be okay?"
"He'll be fine,"
Castile told me as he knelt. A flame sparked to life as he lit an oil lamp, chasing away a bit of the mist.
"I'm going to give him some food and then a blanket. He'll probably be asleep before us."
I had no idea how I would sleep tonight. The surroundings made the blood forest feel like a luxurious respite. Another lantern came alive, held by Kieran.
"I'm going to grab some branches."
Castile glanced up.
"Don't go too far."
"Yes, sir,"
Kieran answered with far too much enthusiasm. I watched the yellow glow of his lantern until it disappeared. Why aren't there any animals in these mountains?
"They sense the magic and stay away."
Castile unrolled a thick canvas, one designed to keep the cold and damp from the ground from soaking through. As he spread out one of the blankets, the mist scattered a bit.
"Here."
He took my gloved hand when I didn't move, drawing me down so I was seated in front of him.
"I'm going to take care of Seti. I'll be right back, okay?"
I nodded. When he rose, I noticed he left the only source of light behind.
You don't need the lantern?"
"No."
He started to turn and then stopped.
"Don't let your curiosity get the best of you. Stay here, please.
You do not need to worry about me wandering off."
I wasn't going to move more than a foot, and I didn't after he went back to feed Seti and made sure he was comfortable. But I did lift a hand, waving it through the tendrils of fog gathering around me. The mist dispersed, only to seep back to dance and swirl around the finger I wore my ring on. It almost seemed alive, as if it were interacting with my movements and not simply impacted by them. My eyes squinted as a wisp of mist coiled down the left arm of my cloak. I jerked my arm back, and the mist recoiled and stayed there, a foot or so in front of me, waiting. Biting my lip, I stretched forward, extending my fingers. The mist pulsed, and then slowly expanded,
forming a stream that grew what looked like ghostly fingers. The hand flattened against my left palm. I gasped and drew back. The mist responded in kind, mimicking my movements.
What are you doing over there?
Castile's voice broke through the silence, seeming to startle the mist more than me. It scattered. And then it struck me. This isn't normal mist, is it? The mist is the magic.
Yes, came his response. And you're definitely doing something, aren't you?
I shook my head in wonder.
No.
I dragged the word out as the magic twisted toward the sound of Castile's voice. I rose onto my knees and stretched out, skimming just the tips of my fingers through the vapors. It shimmied. My brows rose. Kieran said the magic here is tied to the gods. How is that possible if they sleep?
The short, very condensed version of a very convoluted reason is that even though the gods sleep, there is a level of consciousness still present. You already know that.
I did.
They created the mist to protect the pillars of Atlantia, he explained. And the mist turned back to him, as if it were listening. But it's basically an extension of them, or at the very least, an extension of their will.
Something about being surrounded by a part of the god's consciousness was incredibly bizarre. What do the pillars of Atlantia look like?
You'll see them tomorrow.
But some say patience is a virtue, his voice echoed back to me. Some deserve a punch in the face, I muttered, but I fell silent. As much as it perturbed me to admit, Castile was right. I eventually grew used to the mist, or more appropriately, the magic. I wondered, though, if it were an extension of the gods' will, then why did Atlanteans trigger it? Then again, it had allowed the armies to pass through. However, they were leaving instead of entering. Castile returned, as did Kieran. A small fire was lit, beating back the thickest of the magic. I took care of my personal needs, not far from Castile's presence, which was not something I cared to ever repeat, and no amount of intimacy or openness would change that. Then we ate by the fire. It wasn't until afterward, when Kieran stretched out on the canvas that Castile had laid down earlier, that I took a closer look at the sleeping arrangements. There were three blankets, side by side and overlapping. My eyes widened as I stared at the two spaces beside Kieran.
Are we sleeping here? I demanded.
The three of us? I was wondering when she was going to notice that, Kieran commented.
My gaze narrowed as the mist slipped over Kieran's chest.
Is it really necessary that the three of us sleep so close?
Is it necessary for you to make it sound like we'll be doing something other than sleeping?
Castile queried, and when my gaze shot to him, he grinned.
I mean, all we're doing is sleeping side by side.
He reclined back on one hand as the dimple appeared in his cheek.
Unless you have a different idea. If so, I'm very curious to learn more about it, wife.
I stared at him as the mist seemed to still around us.
What? I'm just a very curious soul.
Did you forget that I'm armed? I asked softly.
Are you thinking about using it against me?
In the glow of the fire, both dimples appeared.
If so, this sleeping arrangement may get very uncomfortable for Kieran.
I immediately thought of the joining, and the humor dancing across Castile's face was evidence that he knew where my mind had gone.
Oh, interesting, came the wolven's response.
I'm going to seriously hurt you both, I growled as the mist drifted away.
And I'm so very intrigued now, Castile replied, and then laughed as he patted the space beside him.
It's going to get even colder during the night, more so than when we were in the Blood Forest. In about an hour or so, you'll be grateful for the body heat.
That was highly unlikely.
Which, by the way, is the only thing either of us is offering tonight.
Castile tacked on, the teasing gone from his gaze. Kieran snorted, and there was a taste of sugar on my tongue. Amusement.
Yeah, I don't feel like having my head ripped off tonight.
I doubt that will happen, I muttered. Castile moved then, catching my hand. He pulled me down beside him, and I didn't really fight him. The sleeping arrangements were awkward, but Castile was my... He was my husband. And it wasn't like Kieran hadn't already been in far more awkward situations with us. Like when he'd seen me naked in the tub when we barely knew each other. Or when he'd heard me screaming and walked in on Castile and I, only to discover they were not shouts of fear or pain. Or when Castile had needed to feed. I told myself to stop thinking about all of that as Castile drew the blanket over us and then settled beside me. There was space between the three of us. Not much. Maybe an inch or so. And so I hoped I stayed still during the night. And I really hoped that what Castile had said about Kieran wasn't true. That he kicked in the middle of the night. I wanted to turn toward Castile. I liked... using him as a pillow. Okay, I liked being close to him, but he was lying on his back, actually behaving himself, and so I stayed where I was, watching the mist as it moved in slow waves above us. After a couple of minutes, I tilted my head, and it seemed to do the same, tipping to the same side. I glanced at Castile. I thought his eyes were closed. When I looked at Kieran, it appeared to be the same with him. Could they really be asleep already? I drew a hand out from the blanket and lifted it a few inches. The mist dropped and stretched like before, forming wispy fingers.
What are you doing?
Castile asked. The mist fell apart. You scared it, I grumbled.
Scared what?
He asked. The mist, or magic, whatever. Castile shifted onto his side.
You can't scare it, he said. It's just magic. It's not like it's alive.
Seems alive to me, I replied.
That doesn't make sense, Kieran said tiredly.
It interacts with you, I told them.
It's your imagination.
The wolven rolled, and I felt his knee brush my leg. It's not my imagination.
The magic can play tricks on you, Castile said, taking my hand and drawing it back under the blanket. Make you think you're seeing things you aren't.
I frowned.
You should sleep, he said. The morning will come too soon.
Not soon enough for me. In the quiet, my thoughts wandered. I thought of Renfern and how I wished I'd done something more. Something different to change what had happened to him, and Elijah, and all the others. I wondered if Phillips and Luddy, the guard and huntsman who'd traveled from Macedonia with us, had known the truth about the Ascended, or if they had been a casualty of a quiet war, just like Rylan and Victor. My heart ached as I watched the mist slowly move above me. I missed Tawny. And I prayed that she hadn't gone through the ascension. Then my mind veered to how the wolven had surrounded us. Could that have been me? Had I projected something and they simply answered? I looked over at Kieran again. His eyes were closed. Did he really think it was me calling to them? I hated moments like this. When sleep evaded me and all that existed was things better not dwelled upon, I forced my thoughts away and something occurred to me. Are there any gods asleep under the Blood Forest?
What?
Castile murmured, his voice thick with sleep. I realized I'd woken him, though I didn't feel even remotely bad about that. I repeated my question.
That's probably the most random thing that's ever come out of your mouth, Kieran grumbled. And I've heard you say some pretty random stuff.
There are no gods under the Blood Forest as far as I know,
Castile answered, his eyes closed.
What made you think of that?
The trees here remind me of the Blood Forest, though gold instead of red.
Hmm,
Castile murmured.
Makes sense. Maybe to you,
Kieran grumbled. Do you know where Penelope sleeps? I asked about the goddess I'd been named after. Kieran sighed.
Not here, I can tell you that.
A small smile played across Castile's lips.
I believed she slumbers under the great Athenaeum in Chalcedonia.
Really? When Castile nodded, I decided I didn't like the idea of the goddess of wisdom, loyalty, and duty sleeping there, at the heart of the Ascended. What about Theon?
The god of accord and war, and his twin, Lila, rest beneath the pillars of Atlantia,
Castile answered. I opened my mouth.
Please don't,
Kieran interrupted.
Don't what? Ask where every single god or goddess sleeps, because that will lead to more questions. I just know it will,
he said, and I rolled my eyes.
You should be asleep like them, your highness.
Don't call me that, I snapped.
Then go to sleep,
Kieran ordered. I can't just fall asleep, I muttered. I'm not like you two.
I can always read to you, Castile offered. I still have a certain diary with me. There is a chapter I'm sure you'll be interested in. Miss Willa has the same sleeping arrangement.
No, nope.
I screwed my eyes closed.
Not necessary.
Are you sure?
Castile seemed to have wiggled closer, his entire leg pressed against mine.
Yes,
he laughed softly, but I didn't dare say a word. I wouldn't put it past him to retrieve that damn diary and somehow be able to read those words with his extra special Atlantean eyes. So I lay there. I didn't know how much time passed before I fell asleep, but I knew I must have because I suddenly became aware of how incredibly warm I felt. Every part of me had somehow escaped the cold of the mountain. Every part of me. Slowly, I realized exactly why I was so toasty. I'd turned to Castile in my sleep. He was on his back, and I'd all but climbed halfway on top of him. My head lay in the crook of his shoulder and chest. One of my legs was tossed over his, and the entire front of my body was fused to his side. One of his hands was curled around my shoulder. But that wasn't the only explanation for why I was so warm. Heat pressed against my back. A heavy arm lay over my waist, and a leg was tucked between mine. If I had turned to Castile in my sleep, Kieran had also turned. As if Castile were a magnet that drew both of us. My heart thudded as I lay there, unsure what to do. Should I wake them? Shrug Kieran off? I had a feeling that would wake them. And the last thing I wanted was for Kieran to discover that the three of us cuddled together. Both of them were incredibly warm, and there wasn't anything sinful about this. Well, the way I was half sprawled across Castile didn't feel exactly innocent, but Kieran had most likely done what anyone would. He'd sought warmth in his sleep, and I couldn't exactly fault him for that. What also didn't feel entirely innocent was where my hand rested. It was shamefully low on Castile's stomach. I knew this because I could feel the imprint of the buttons against my palm. If I moved my fingers more than an inch lower, I doubted he would remain asleep. The knowledge of that filled my head with all kinds of things I really shouldn't be thinking about at the moment, like what we'd done in the carriage, in the bedchamber, the cavern.
I mentally throat-punched myself as I moved my hand away from that really fascinating part of Castile, trying not to focus on the tautness of his lower stomach or the way his skin seemed to burn through his clothing. Castile's arm curled, tightening around my shoulder, drawing me closer. My breath snagged as his movement triggered Kieran. He shifted behind me, and my pulse felt like a trapped bird. A sleek, muscled thigh slid between mine, pressing in. I had no idea if it was Castile's or Kieran's. 100 different thoughts and emotions exploded through me. So many, so fast, I couldn't make sense of them. But neither of them woke. So I lay there, and my mind wandered again, not to places that would make this sleeping arrangement even more awkward, or to sad ones. I pretended, not like before with Castile. I pretended that my brother was still immortal, as was Tawny, that Castile's brother was free, and that the Ascended weren't a reality. I pretended that tomorrow I would be arriving in a kingdom that welcomed me, to a king and queen who would greet me with open arms. I pretended that Castile and I were at the start of a life together, one that would be long and happy, instead of one that felt like it could end at any minute. I pretended that we both aged, and that I was always reckless enough, brave enough, to just let myself feel, to experience, to live without the past shadowing every choice I made, or the future looming over every decision. That we always existed in the now and lived. Eventually, the warmth that both of them radiated, the steady, deep rise and fall of their chests, lulled me back to sleep. Sometime later, I drifted on the fringes of sleep once more, brought there by a whisper, a calling, a name. Poppy.